studying Sefer Yehoshua. We're in these dry perakim that we're in, because it's all talking about the division of Eretz Yisrael to the tribes, and it's giving you the borders, the names of the cities. Not too much narrative in the text. We're in Perek Tet Zayin. It says, "Vayetzei Goral lebnei Yosef." Now it's giving the lottery to Bnei Yosef. "Vayerden Yericho lebnei Yericho Mizracha." We know Yosef gets the Yericho region. Pasuk says, "Vayetzei mebet El Luza." ועבר את גבול הערכי עטרות וירד ימה אל גבול היפלטי עד גבול בית חורון תחתון ועד גזר והיו תוסעותיו ימה וירחלו בני יוסף מנשה ואפרים. So we know that the tribe of Yosef is divided into two. You have Menashe and Ephraim. Yosef is not counted. It's Menashe and Ephraim is counted as two. Shevet Levi is not counted. That's how you have 12 Shevatim. 12 Shevatim is Reuven, Shimon, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. And then you have Menashe, and you have Ephraim. They're counted as two. And technically, if you count Yosef and you count Levi, so you end up with 14. But we don't count Yosef, so you end up only with 12. For whatever reason, that's a whole subject in itself. Yosef gets a double chelik. I think the pasuk said in Vayichi, Ephraim u'Menashe k'Reuben v'Shimon yehiuli. That Ephraim and Menashe have double status, like Reuben and Shimon. So therefore, Yosef gets a double portion based on his children. V'yatzah gemul hayam ba'amich. מתת מספון ונסע בגבול מזרחה טענת שילו ועבר אותו במזרח ינוחה. So that's the subject we want to talk about today in this chapter. פסוק וב. Part of the חלק of Yosef is called טענת שילו. But I know what שילו is. Shiloh is where the Mishkan was. Mishkan Shiloh. We know that Mishkan Shiloh was in the Chalik of Yosef. But it doesn't call it Mishkan Shiloh. It calls it Ta'anat Shiloh. What does that word Ta'anat Shiloh mean? It's spelled Taf Aleph Nun Taf. Ta'anat Shiloh. Any ideas on that? Shiloh. So the Gemara in Zevachim on Kuf Yud Chet. Let's see what we see from the Gemara. We'll get to it Bezat Hashem in the summer. So now we'll get a preview. So the pasuk says, on the Kuf Yud Chet Amud Bet. Gemara over here says that giving you how long each one of these mishkans lasted. Taru Rabbanan, Yemei Ohel Moed Shebemidbar 40 Shana. So Ohel Moed lasted 40 years, the Mishkan and the Midbar. Haser Ahat, minus 1, so 39. Yemei Ohel Moed Shebegilgal 14. So Ohel Moed in Gilgal, that was 14 years. Zayin Shekavte Vezayin Shechalku. Yemei Ohel Moed Shebenov Vegibon Hamisha v'sheva. Nishtayinu l'shilo gimel me'ot v'shev'im chaser achat. So basically Shiloh's existence was 369 years, which is a long, long time that we had this Mishkan. And then of course Mishkan Shiloh would be destroyed. There's something special about Mishkan Shiloh. The Gemara says on the Amud Rishon, that there's certain korbanot that are called Kodshe Kadashim. That's like a korban Hatat. And then you have korbanot that are called Kadashim Kalim. And when you eat these korbanot, you have to eat them in certain places. You can't eat them anywhere. You have to eat them, you know, within the confines of the Mishkan. However, in Mishkan Shiloh, there was a chidush. Mishkan Shiloh, the law said that when it comes to Kadashim Kalim, which would be like a korban shelamim, you're allowed to eat the korban bechol haro'eh. Bechol haro'eh means in any area where you can see the Mishkan Shiloh, that's already considered within the confines. Which means Mishkan Shiloh now has a tremendous kedushah. You don't actually have to be within the walls of Mishkan Shiloh. You've heard that you have to be within hearing range. This is not hearing range. You just have to be within seeing range. And if a guy lives on top of a mountain far away, but he can see Mishkan Shiloh, you know, on the horizon, so he can eat Kadashim Kalim. That's what the Gemara says. Gemara says over here, Shekol Why is it called Ta'anat Shiloh? Shekol haro'e oto mit'aneyach alav al achinat kadashim Shiloh. Ta'anat Shiloh means the agony of Shiloh, the suffering of Shiloh. Because when you see the destruction of Shiloh, it brings the person to ta'aniyah ba'aniyah. It brings a person to sadness, to despondency. You say, wow, what a place this was. We remember for 359 years we were zocheh to have a place where you just look at it and already the place has kiddushah where you're allowed to eat kadashim kalim b'chol ha-ro'eh. So therefore the Mishnah, the Torah comes along and predicts that when Mishkan Shiloh would be destroyed, the people would have fond memories of Shiloh those years. So therefore the Torah refers to Shiloh as Ta'anat Shiloh. Ta'anat Shiloh is the sadness that's brought to Shiloh. Shiloh has tremendous memories of this Kiddushah. You know, where do you have a Mishkan where you just look at it? You can see it already, you're allowed to eat kadashim kalim. Normally you have to be within the walls. You have to be within the kila'im for kadashim, kodesh kadashim. But shake it over here, you're eating it far away. Kadashim kalim, you're eating far away, and still it's considered within the confines. That means the kedusha of Shiloh had tremendous, tremendous kedusha. Why do you have to eat korbanot within the walls? What's the logic of that? Why is eating korbanot limited to certain places? Why can't you eat the korbanot anywhere you want? I mean, it's kosher meat. I make a barbecue. As umtin, you have to eat the barbecue on East 14th Street. You can eat the barbecue wherever you want. No, you have to eat it within your backyard and make sure there's an eruv. Why, when it comes to korbanot, they tell you there's certain limitations where you can eat. What's the difference where you eat the korban?
Huh?
Well, the part you're eating is not going to be on the mizbeah. What do you mean cooking?
Where are you preparing the meat?
You brought some of the meat on the mizbeah.
Right. And
some of the meat you have to eat.
And the spot where they come.
Bidiyuk, and I'm asking a question, why the limitation of the spot? Why can't you just take the meat home and eat it wherever you want? The explanation is that wherever you're going to have kiddusha, so you're going to have an ahiza from the kilipot. The kilipot are your neck from the kiddusha. Wherever you find holiness, you're going to find the scavengers that are going to try to not interfere, but to try to sustain themselves from the kiddusha. The kilipot have no existence, so they need to feed off of something. So what do they feed off of? They feed off of the kiddusha. For example, the mashal that we always give to this is the mashal of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. God forbid when somebody dies, Bar Minan, Lo Aleinu Velo Aleichem, the body, the corpse, takes upon the highest level of Tum'ah. It's called Avi Avot HaTum'ah. Why is that so? When the guy was alive, he was not Tameh. All of a sudden he dies, they don't put him only Aviyah Tumah, they put him grandfather Tumah, Aviyah Vota Tumah. What's the logic? Explanation is because when he dies, the Neshama leaves. When the Neshama leaves, all the Kalipot come on the body. The question is why? Why don't they come on the body when the Neshama is there? Why do they wait to come on the body only when the Neshama leaves? The explanation is when the Neshama is there, it's too strong. So the kiddipot gets scared, they can't go close to the guy. When the neshama leaves, however, even when the neshama leaves, there's still a roshim of kiddusha in the body. It's a roshim. It's a trace. The mashal of the neshama leaving the body would be the mashal, the parable, of somebody that has a barrel of honey. And he empties out the barrel of honey. But what happens? On the side of the barrel, you still have some traces of honey. So what happens? When the barrel is filled with honey and sealed, there's no flies. Once you empty out the barrel, now all the flies come, in order to get the traces of the honey that's on the side. When the neshama is there, it's too strong. The kiddipot do not have access. When the neshama leaves, there's like the honey of the neshama that's still on the side of the body. That's the neshimu. There the kiddipot, like the scavengers, come along and try to feed off the body. As a result, when you have that void of kiddusha, but the remnants of it attract the kiddipot and the chitzonim. And therefore it puts on the body the tum'ah, abi avot the tum'ah. You understand how it works? The kiddipot need to be your neck. So that's a lesson. Wherever you find kiddusha, you have to be always careful. Because right next to kiddusha is the kiddipot. If you make a left turn, you're going to go into the wrong neighborhood. For example, what's the holiest day of the week?
Shabbat.
Good guess. Shabbat. Well, if you're a barber, it's Monday. But used to be. Now it's Shabbat. Shabbat is the Mekor HaBeracha. What happens? The Kelipot come. Who's the Kelipot? Friday and Sunday. The Arabs took Friday and the Christians took Sunday. They cannot take Shabbat because Shabbat is the Ikar of the Kedushah. But they need to be Yonek. How come they didn't take Wednesday? So Wednesday is not next to anything of Kadosh. So on Friday they Yonek from the Kedushah of Erev Shabbat, and the Goyim are Yonek from the Kedushah Motzei Shabbat. So therefore they took these 2 days, like the Pasuk says, Saviv Reshaim Yitalachud. The Reshaim go Saviv. They go around. They hover. They can't go to the Ikar. That's too powerful for them. So they go on the outskirts. There's 10 Sefirot. 10 Sefirot represent the Yanei Kiddushah. 10 in Judaism is a serious number. 10 is a minyan. And the Devarim Shebekiddushah Pachot Ma'asara. That the Devarim Shebekiddushah needs 10. The Kelipot cannot touch the number 10. That is Kadosh. So where do they hang out?
9-11.
That's it. There he goes. That's why 9-11 is a bad luck there. 9-11. 9-11 is the Kelipot. 9-11 is the Tisha B'Av. Av is the 11th month. 9th day of Av. So 9-11. We always had 9-11 from the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was on 9-11. So therefore those numbers are going to be where the Yinika is. The point is, one has to be very careful when he has a piece of meat from a korban. Because in that piece of meat of the korban, there's kiddushah. Wherever there's kiddushah, what's the rule? There's kelipot. So therefore, one has to be very, very careful where he brings it and where he takes it. The more exposure, the more susceptible and vulnerable does it become to the chitzonim. So the holier it is, the more you have to keep it mitzna'ah, within the kila'im, within the walls. That's in order to protect it, so the chitzonim, which are called the outer levels of the husks, of the kelipot, are not able to be yonek. Now, when it comes to a piece of meat on the barbecue, it's not kadosh. So therefore, there's no limitations where you can eat it. You can eat a regular piece of steak any way you want. There's no kedushah in it that you have to worry about somebody taking from it. Anytime you have an inyan of kedushah, you have to remain more tsanua, more private. Otherwise, you're going to have, like I said, susceptibility to these inyanim. That's the sort of why korbanot have to be eaten on the inside. Similarly speaking, Jewish people were in the midbar. The pasuk says the midbar was filled with nahash, saraf, ve'akrab, with snakes, serpents, scorpions. Now, although, of course, we can understand that pasuk literally, but the Nahash, Saraf, Ve'akrab in the Midbar also represents the Chitzonim, the Mazikim. The Midbar is a Rishut HaRabim. The Midbar is an open area. Klai Yisrael were faced with a great challenge in the Midbar, which means in the Midbar, they're in the Makom Chutz. It's a place that has no Yishuv. Where there's no yeshuv, where there's no settlement, that's where all the mazikim come. That you have to be very careful. At night, you shouldn't walk alone into a desolated area. Is the mazikim able to come to these places over here? Tashet hoshik vihi laila, moter moskul haito yaar. All the wild animals come out at night, and they come into the desolate areas. In the place of a yeshuv with his people, you don't have to worry too much. So the Jewish people, when they were in the Midbar, they were in the most dangerous place. Not only because you're in a place that doesn't have food and water and natural resources, but they were in a place that is prone to mazikim, nahas, arav, na'akrav. You understand what I'm saying of it? So the Jewish people had a great challenge to turn the midbar into a yeshuv. Their responsibility in the midbar was to turn the midbar into a settlement. That's a big challenge, to turn a desolation into makom yeshuv in order to scare away the mazikim. How did they do that? They studied Torah in each location, they prepared a mishkan, they had their tents. If you move into a town already, the town is miyushav. But here you're going into a desert, and to turn it into a makom yeshuv is a very, very high madriga that Klai Yisrael had to do. That was their challenge. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would say this to all his shilichim. This is the job of Klai Yisrael, is to turn a midbar into a yeshuv. He would send his students to these remote places. A guy finds himself in Anchorage, Alaska. It's him in the minyan of Eskimos and a couple of polar bears. And you got the Chabad guy out there. He's there with his Rebbetzin. They don't even have a mikveh. It's too cold over there. It's all ice. And now he's got to turn Anchorage, Alaska into Makom Yishuv, Makom Torah. So he's got to start from scratch. So this was the Rebbe's, he would put these people in a place where there was Chitzonim and Kenipot and all the, and now through the Torah and through the mitzvot, you mind sweep the place. And now the Kenipot are on the extremities. Anyway, when you have the Korban has Kiddushah in it. So therefore when there's Kiddushah, you have to be extra careful that it shouldn't get spoiled. So therefore you have to eat it within. But now we come to the big Hadush. When it came to Mishkan Shiloh, all bets are off. You don't have to eat the Qurban within the walls. You don't have to eat the Qurban within the confines. Mishkan Shiloh, it's enough that you see the Mishkan. Based on the way we understand the inyan of the privacy of the korbanot and the limited areas and the restricted areas, how then does Mishkan Shiloh all of a sudden afford the eater ample space? Mechol haro'eh. Why aren't we concerned about the kedipot that you're eating this korban miles away from Mishkan Shiloh? If I can ask the question in a simple way, why is Mishkan Shiloh the exception to the rule? That fair, gentlemen? You understand the way we're asking the question?
As long as you see it.
Yeah, as long as you can see it, exactly. So why is it the exception to the rule? The answer? The answer is on the Gemara. שכל הרואה אותו מתענח עליו על אכילת קדשים שלו. רבי אבאו אמר קרא, בין פורת יוסף, בין פורת עלי עין. עין שלא רצתה לזון וליהנות בדבר שאינו שלו, תזכה ותאכל כמלוא עיניה. That's the power of Shiloh. The eye of Yosef that did not want to benefit from something that did not belong to it, namely Eshet Potiphar. So the Kiddushah of Yosef's Sheminat Enayim was so strong, so therefore that infused in Mishkan Shiloh such a power that Bechol HaRoeh, that anybody that just looked at Mishkan Shiloh, already the Kiddushah was on such a great concentration. It's a midah keneged midah. Yosef did not allow the kelipah of Eshet Potiphar to enter. So therefore, in his chelek, the kedipa will not enter bechol aroeh. The one that closed his eyes from eshet Potifar in order not to let the tumah to enter. So therefore, midah keneged midah in his makom, which is Shiloh, anybody that gazes at it already will have pure kedusha without any chitzurim in kelipot. The answer to the question is the kedusha of Shiloh comes from the abstention of Yosef. Again, what's the connection? So let's start again. You walked in late. We're reading Navi. We're learning the book of Yoshua. We're in chapter 16. We're talking about the division of the land of Israel. We're talking about the chelek that Yosef got. Yosef got Ta'anat Shiloh. So at the beginning of the Derash, we explained what is Ta'anat Shiloh. And we said that anybody that looks at the destruction of Shiloh, you know, bemoans the fact. And then we started to explain some of the rules of Shiloh that you can eat the korbanot bechol aroeh. We then asked, why does it have such an exceptional kedusha that you can eat bechol aroeh? And because the midah is that since Yosef was not zam min ha-re'iyah, so Borei Olam says you didn't let your eyes roll, and as a result, bring in the tum'ah into the area. So your area is going to be so kadosh that just in gazing at it, already the kinipot have no power to go onto the korban, and therefore it's eaten bechol aroeh, which is a tremendous, tremendous hadush over here. The Gemara is saying that which Yosef did with Eshet Potifar would influence Mishkan Shiloh for 359 years. You talk about an explosion of Kedusha, that when one Jew overcomes a Nisayon, when one Jew closes his eyes and doesn't look, you say, okay, what did he do? No big deal. He doesn't make it into the newspapers. It's not considered, you know, such a earth-shattering event. But if you'd only know Yosef controlled his eyes, it would change almost four centuries of the way Mishkan Shiloh works. That for now, Mishkan Shiloh works like no other place. All the other Mishkans, you have to eat it within the kila'im, within the curtains, or within the walls. When it came to Mishkan Shiloh, bechol aroeh. That means the power of that kedusha explosion of Yosef, it transcends all the way to Eretz Yisrael, to his chelek. That's called kedusha of Yosef. Question?
Before the Mishkan was in Shiloh, the Rav said that the same dispensation didn't work.
Correct. In Gilgal, there's no din of kol aroeh. In Gilgal, you have the laws of Nefnim min HaKela'im, Nefnim min HaChoma. In Shiloh, you have a new law. You can see it, you can eat. Because Shiloh is Yosef. This Kedusha of Yosef, Rabotai, obviously came from his father. You know, Kedusha, you learn in the house. There's nobody Kadosh like Yaakov Avinu. We learned yesterday in the Seder Hayom, the first three berachot of the Amidah, the first berachah is Keneged Abraham, again Abraham. The second berachah is Mechayem Metim, that's Keneged Yitzhak, when he was on the Mizbeach, he was resurrected. And Atah Kadosh is Keneged Yaakov Abinu. Atah Kadosh is Yaakov Abinu. V'gdishu et Kadosh Yaakov et Elohi Yisrael. Yaakov is Kadosh. Where does Kedusha manifest itself? Kedusha Taberit. Yaakov Abinu, 84 years he did not drop a drop of the Zera Kodesh, Ot Berit Kodesh. How do we know? When Reuven was born, it was the first tipa of Zera. He says that at the end of his life. He says, Reuven Bechori Ata, Kohi V'Reshit Oni. Reshit Oni means it's the first of my strength.
84 years. Yaakov Abir was just sitting and learning Torah, no hirhur, no chas v'shalom. So if you have a father like that, and obviously the Shevatim, you know, saw that Kiddushah of their father, they felt that presence of Kiddushah. They say that Beru HaKadosh was the Gilgul of Yaakov Abinu. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, HaNasi Rashi Tevot, Hu Nisot Shel Yaakov Abinu. They say Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi never put his hands beneath his belt. You hear the Kiddushah of Rabbi Yehuda? What's the matter about walking with your hands down? It's beneath the belt. It's already too close to the Tum'ah. His hands always like this above. That's amazing. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda is the Kiddushah of Yaakov Abinu. And therefore, Yaakov Abinu's prime son was Yosef. Ele toledot Yaakov, Yosef. Ele toledot Yaakov. Who's the product of Yaakov? Yosef. What do you mean by the product? The product of Yaakov is the 12 Shevatim. But Ele toledot Yaakov, Yosef. The main traits of Yaakov Abinu went down into Yosef. That explains why when Yaakov Abinu, when Yosef was about to go with Eshet Potiphar, he saw his father in the window. Yaakov Abinu was telling him, this is the Kiddushah, what are you doing over here? This is me working on these inyanim over here, what are you doing? Ele toledot Yaakov Yosef. Rabotai, I'll show you a secret now. You have a paper? Bring us a paper. Yeah, go in the office, go into the machine. And bring us a piece of paper. No, this paper is part of a book. It's attached.
We need Joe.
If you rip it, the whole book will come apart.
Joe,
yeah, Joe Towers that book over there. Although if he wanted to, he could have ripped it, but he wants to save the book, no problem. Now look at this over here. Ele toledot Yaakov Yosef. Yaakov is spelled Yud Ayin Kof Bet. Is that correct? Do you know how you do the Milui? What's the Milui of Yud? Yud Vav Dalet. What's the Milui of Ayin? Ayin Yud Nun. What's the Milui of Kof? Vav Peh. And what's the milui of bet? Yud taf. The milui is referred to as the tolda of the word. You see, the word itself is Yaakov. What comes out of the word is the tolda. The milui of the word is referred to the tolda. Understand how we're learning it? Toda is the birth of the word. So what is the Toda of Yaakov? The Milui. Understand what I'm saying? What's the first one? Vav Dalet. How much is Vav Dalet? 10. That's Yud. What's the next Milui? 60. That's Samech. What's the next Milui? Vav Peh. So you ready? You see the Milui of Yaakov is what? Yosef. And what is the Taf Yud? Ele Toledot Yaakov Yosef. You see what we just did over here? Ele Toledot Yaakov Yosef. It's perfect. It's right in there. They have all the letters. So you see that Yaakov and Yosef are one. So they share the same traits. Not only that, the pasuk says, "Vayhi Adonai et Yosef, vayhi ish matzliach." Hashem was with Yosef, and as a result, he was considered ish matzliach. What is the numerical value of Yaakov? It's tricky. Yud Ayin Kof Bet is 182. What is the numerical value of Yosef? Yosef is 156. If you add 26 to 156, what do you have?
182.
Vayhi Adonai et Yosef. When you add Yudke Vavke to Yosef, then he's the same gematria as Yaakov. Vayhi Ish Masliach. Now everybody becomes Masliach. That means Yaakov and Yosef have the same midot. Ele toledot Yaakov Yosef. That's why our rabbis tell us that there's going to be two Mashiachim, two Messiahs. The first Mashiach is called Mashiach ben Yosef. Exactly. That's you learned something. Mashiach ben Yosef is the precursor to Mashiach ben David. Some say Mashiach ben Yosef came already. Some say the Gaon Mevilna was Mashiach ben Yosef. Some say came before. That's up for discussion. But there isn't yet a Mashiach ben Yosef. What is the gematria of Mashiach? 300, 340, 350, 358. Ben is how much? 52. And Yosef is 156. What's the gematria of Mashiach ben Yosef? 16. I got 566. Anybody want to challenge that before we go further? Mashiach ben Yosef, what did you get, Tomer?
566.
Yeah, that's how you came out? Not 567? What's the gematria of Mashiach ben Yosef? Alright, nobody wants to help me. It's 566. Mashiach is 358. Ben is 52. And Yosef is 156. What's the problem?
Here's the other one. Tradition.
You understand what we're saying over here? Mashiach ben Yosef is 566. Let's go back to Yaakov. Yud Ayin Kof Bet. What's the Milui of Yud? Vav Dal, that's 10. What's the Milui of Ayin? 60. What's the Milui of Kof? Vav Pe is how much? 86. And Bayit Bet is Yud Tav 410. What's 410 plus 86 plus 60 plus 10? 10 plus 60 plus 86 plus 410.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. 0, 0, 6, 6, 7, 8, 8 and 8 is 16, 566. Ele toledot Yaakov Yosef. The toledot of Yaakov is Mashiach ben Yosef. It's exactly the same. Exactly the same numbers. So you see that Yosef HaSadiq, when he did that incredible action of not being Zan, Enav, from Eshet Potiphar, that already he inherited from his father. That Kiddushah that he inherited from his father, Yaakov, that would already, you know, transcend hundreds of years of Jewish history and already affect the status of where Kiddiport can travel to. He like bombed the whole area where the Kiddiport are just, you know, it's a no entry zone. You know, they have to stop at the border. They can't travel past that. Now, Yehuda was responsible really for the sale of Yosef. We know. Yehuda was the brother that was driving the sale. They ended up selling him to Egypt. They sold him to Egypt, and as a result, Yehuda was responsible for that test that he put his brother in. You know, his brother was now challenged with Eshet Potiphar. And the Zohar HaKadosh writes, the Gemara says, that although he didn't commit the sin, but 10 drops of Zerah came from within his fingers. I'm not too sure what that means.
I don't know how Zera comes from the fingers exactly. But that's what the Gemara says, that there was some sort of ten tipot came from the ten fingers. Yehuda gets married. Yehuda knows already that he's going to have to pay for this. He calls his first son Er. It says Vayikra et Shemu Er. Why do you call him Er? Because he knew that this kid's going to be Ra. So he tried to switch his mazal around a little. He called him Er. But what does the pasuk say? Vayhi Er Ra ben Hashem. The Gemara says, what did he do? He wasted the Zera. Yehuda knew that was a punishment for what he did to Yosef. You put the Ish Kadosh in such a matzav, now he ended up getting a child. That was Ra. Yehuda realized that the punishment of God is, you know, the Gezerah is unchangeable. So he has another son. What does the Pasuk say? He doesn't even name the son this time. The Pasuk says, Vatikra. Vatikra, she called. What's the next kid called? Onan. Why do you call him Onan? They saw where this kid's going to bring Aninut to the family. She's going to die also. Onan b'lashon Onen, Aninut. That's exactly what happened. What happened with Onen? He wasted his Zerah as well. Yehuda understood that this is a punishment. However, something good came out. What's good came out? That because Yosef controlled himself, Yehab Mishkan Shiloh Bechol Aro'eh. So what did they name the third child? Shela, which is Otiyot Shiloh.
Was it her?
Was a girl?
It's a woman's name,
Shela.
Shela.
Shela. Not Shiloh. Oh, Shela. I don't know. It's a girl's name. It's a boy. He was a boy. Shela, which is the same otiyot as Shiloh. Yehuda was saying that it's true we put Yosef into the, but there's a zechut that came out of it. The zechut that came out of it is Mishkan Shiloh's Bechol Aro'eh. So again, you see, Rabotai, the power of the tzaddik Yosef. Yosef is called Yosef as tzaddik, and the Gemara says that anybody that controls himself in Arayot is destined to become a king. Yosef becomes a king because first you have to be a king over yourself. If you can rule over yourself, then already God will give you the zechut to rule over others. David HaMelech was a king. Once already he fell with Bathsheba, he lost his kingship. He went into Galut. You see that not only does the Kedusha come from Yosef, but Malchut comes from Yosef as well.
And what's the guy supposedly blow it, he can't make it up?
Well, you can make the Shuvah. He's always the Shuvah. Well, after David made the Shuvah, he got the kingdom back. So that's the Hadush on the Navi. Wow. Again, another blockbuster chidush, you know, based on Yosef's behavior. Now we'll say one word on the parasha. We have a chumash. We are reading parashat Naso. Parashat Naso is the parasha that we always read after Shavuot. As you know, it has 176 pesukim. Makes it the longest parasha. My count has it at 176. Is that what you came out with, Elliot? Okay, so I can say anything. Five pesukim. You have over here in the parasha
What makes the parasha long is the korbanot. There's 12 tribal leaders, and they all brought a korban on a specific day. This is called the korban of the Nesi'im l'Hanukkat Mizbeach. So each korban is listed individually. So there's a lot of repetition in the parasha. Each one has how many pesukim? Let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you have 6 pesukim times 12 leaders. So already how many is that? 6 times 12? 72. You're an accountant, David. Be careful. Sometimes. Don't do that on my tax return. You can do that on somebody else's. So now, you see over here, so boom, 72 pesukim, just like that. Who's the first nasi that brings? Vayyam makriv. ביום הראשון את קורבנו נחשון בן עמינדב. יהודה is first. I don't know why יהודה goes first. What system are you following that יהודה goes first? Right, you have to say you're going according to the flags. I mean, there's different ways you can do this. You can go according to the age. Then the Uven would go first. But over here, the system was, according to the way they traveled, Yehuda was first. Now she says, Yakribu et korbanan nahanukata mizbeah. Now she says, Va'adai lo haya yodeya Moshe heach yakribu. Moshe didn't know who goes first. Im kesedr toldotam, im kesedr masaot. Does it go according to toldotam, their age, or does it go according to the masaot, the way they travel? עד שנאמר לו בפי הקדוש ברוך הוא יקריבו למסעות. If God says no, it goes according to the מסעות. And who's the first one according to the מסעות? יהודה. Now everything is hinted in the ta'amim, the notes. If you look at the pasuk, it says ויאמר השם אל משה נשיא אחד ליום. One nasi a day. What are the notes on nasi echad layom? Kadma ve'azla rabia. Kadma ve'azla rabia is, who's rabia? The fourth. Who's the fourth son? Yehuda. Kadma ve'azla, he will proceed and go. Who will proceed and go first? Rabia. So in the ta'amim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already is hinting to Moshe Rabbeinu that the Nasi Echad is Yehuda. Kadma ve'azla Rabia. That's a remez. Now the Pasuk says the second Nasi is who? Bayom HaSheni Ekrib Metanel Ben Su'ar Nasi Yisachar. Why the Nasi Yisachar? See, over here it says, "Hikrib Netanel ben Su'ar, Hikrib et Korbano." It says "Hikrib" twice. The only one that repeats it twice is by Netanel ben Su'ar. "Hikrib," it says, "Hikrib Netanel ben Su'ar." Hikriv et korbanu. So that she's saying, why you have to say hikriv twice? That she says, lefi shebar uben ve'er. The uben came along and had a claim. Ve'amar dayay shekademani Yehuda. It's enough that you put Yehuda in front of me. I want to go second.
Amar lo Moshe mepi ha-gimura ne'emar li shi'akribu kaseder masa'ot.
So what should I do? Reuven, I don't make the lineup. The lineup was already given to me by God. And God said we have to follow the seder ha-masa'ot.
Nekach amar hikriv et korbano. Vehu haser yud. If you look at the word hikriv et korbano, hikriv is written without a yud.
The second hikriv is without a yud.
Shum hashma hakrev lashon sivui, which means the pasuk is saying as if Moshe Rabbeinu was telling him hakrev, don't listen to Reuven, just bring it, because there was an erur over here. There was an inquiry. The Reuven came along and said, ah, I go second. So therefore, he had to tell.
How many years you learning to say just
umau ekriv ekriv shne pa'am?
Why did I say it twice? But
shebishvi shne devarim zachal ekriv shne sheni leshematim. Why did Tael Ben Suar go second? Because he had two zechuyot. Besides the fact that it's going according to the Masa'ot, he had two zechuyot. Ahat, shayu yud'im b'Torah. Yisachar is the tribe of Torah. Shne'emar v'bnei Yisachar yud'im bina la'itim. V'ahat, shem nadnu etza l'nisim etnadev korbanam alav. They were the ones that made up the korban. They gave the idea. It was their idea to bring these korbanot. So for two reasons. Hikriv, hikriv. They have two justifications why they bring. You following or no?
What was the second reason?
The hat shehem natnu esal le nesiim le tnadev korbanot alalu. They were the ones that had the idea to bring these korbanot. Rabotai, whose idea was it to bring these korbanot? Who made up this korban? God didn't have to bring a korban. Who's Abotai? Anybody following what we're saying over here? It's not so difficult. I didn't get to the Hadush yet. To bring these korbanot? Where's the Sivui? To bring these korbanot. He didn't say what to bring. Yeah. No, he didn't say what to bring.
Oh, from Yisrael.
That's what she says. That's right. That's right. Exactly. It was Netanel ben Suar gave the idea. Bring this, bring that, bring this, bring that. Now watch this. You got to read these Rashi's. Whoever, you see some of the secrets in this parasha. This Rashi over here could have been in the Ariza, this Rashi. Rashi says, Ka'arat Kesef. Right? It says, Hikriv, it's called Ka'arat Kesef, Ahad, Shiloshim, Umeah, Mishkana. Rashi says, Minyan Otiyotav. How many letters are in each Korban? Well, in all the Korbanot, probably. Count the letters in all these Korbanot. 930. Keneged Shenotav Shel Adam Harishon. Now he starts giving you the Mazim, Rashi. 930 letters in the Korbanot. Can I get the Adam Rishon? Next Rashi. Shloshim u'me'am ishkala is 130. That's the weight. Because when did Adam Rishon start having children again? After Kain v'Hevel, he was 130 years old. Mizrak ehad kesef. One Mizrak kesef. V'gematria Mizrak ehad kesef is 620. Al Shem Noach she'amid todot ben takuf takuf shana, that he started having children Noach at 600 years, ve'al Shem eslim shana shenigzrak gezerat ha-mabul kodem toldotav, and the gezerat of the mabul was already given eslim shana shenigzrak gezerat ha-mabul kodem toldotav. Oh, before he was born, already the Mabul was 20 years predicted. So the 620 is connected to Mabul. And she goes on Shivim Shekel, Shivim Umot Ha'olam. Kafahat connected to Torah. Shinatna Biyad Echad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Asal HaZahab, Asal Deberot. Mele'a Ketoret, Kematria Shel Ketoret, Taryag. Connected to Taryag Mitzvot. Ah, she's going on over here, incredible, on this Korban over here. This is not Stam... One day we're going to have to go to this Tashiyah to get to... You're bidding Miramis Tadam Rishon, to Noah, to Asir Deberot. Every word is not signed a number over here. I asked a simple question on Nashi. And now based on what I just said, you know the answer. Why does Nashi wait to tell me all these Hiddushim on the second day? Why didn't he tell me all these Rimazim on the first day? The first day it's the same exact numbers. But Nashi writes all these Hiddushim in the Tarel bin Su'ar's day. Why does he wait for the Tarel bin Su'ar? Hazak Baruch. Either because it was his idea. So obviously it was his idea to bring these Korbanot, so therefore it's his Hiddushim. And since the Tarel bin Su'ar is the tribe of Torah, therefore they're the Koveya. They're the Koveya of the Hiddushim over here. They're the Koveya of these Nimazim. And as she says, it comes, you cannot just stop giving Rimazim. But in the Tal'el bin Su'ar, who's Mechaber, all these Kavanot, that already you put the Hiddush in the Shevet, that's Na'ui. Following? But again, we have to answer this question. What does it mean, Ekrivit Korbano, Ekrivit Korbano? And as she says what he says, no problem, we accept it. But maybe there's another answer. Why it says, Ekrivit Korbano, Korbano, it's his Korban. Rabotai, in the parashah that we're reading this week, parashat Nasor, as you know, there's another story here. It says, Ve'ish et kadashav lo yihyeh. Where is that? Right before the story of Sota. Go back. I want to read it inside. For those that want to see it inside, it's parashah. Perek dal, perek he, pasuk yud. Ve'ish et kadashav lo yihyu, ish asher yiten lakohen lo yihye. Rashi learns a pasuk to say that you're supposed to give your sedakah to the kohen. So the pasuk says, Ve'ish et kadashav lo yihyu. If you keep the kadashav for yourself, you know what's going to happen? What you were supposed to give the kohen, that's what you're going to end up with. That means if you had 100%, you were supposed to give 10%. If you held the 10%, ve'ish et kadashav lo yihyu, if you're going to hold the kadashim for you, ish asher yiten lakohen, what you were supposed to give to the kohen, lo yihyeh. That's what you're going to end up with. Hazak Baruch. So from here you learn, if you don't give your maserot, you end up with maser. Guy figures, what do I give maser for? I want to keep the whole 100. He doesn't realize that the giving the 10% secures the 90. But if you want to keep the whole pie, Borei Olam says, no problem. I'll take the 90, you keep the 10. So you don't win. Anyway, the Gemara says, what's the next parasha? The next parasha is Sota. So what does the Gemara say? You know what the connection is? The juxtaposition is that somebody that does not give his ma'asrot to the Kohen, in the end he's going to need the Kohen. How's he going to need the Kohen? His wife's going to become a Sota. He's going to run to the Beit HaMikdash. Emergency, I need to speak to the Kohen. They run to the Kohen, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Flan is outside, needs to speak to you. So what's the matter? I don't know, he's there with his wife's crying. He's yelling at his wife, the whole problem over here. He says, his wife's Sota, now he needs me? Go tell Mr. Flan, where was he last week when I was collecting ma'asrot? When I came to knock on his door, he said, I gave it the office.
The guy told me, I'm not home, my father's sleeping. Ah, when I came to collect my ma'asrot, he's not there. Now he wants to get me, don't wait, I'm suffering. So that's the connection between Parashat Ma'asrot with the Kohen and Parashat Sota. But really, what's the Migdah Kenegin Midah? Because the guy doesn't give his ma'asrot, his wife becomes a sota. And God can make many ways where he'll need the Kohen. Maybe he'll need the Kohen, he'll get Sara'at on his roof. So you need the Kohen to come along and read the Sara'at. Why should it be that if a guy doesn't give his Sadaqah to the Kohen, all of a sudden it causes his wife to become a sota? But what's the logic? God doesn't just punish randomly. It's not over here God and variety punishments. It's got to fit. See you later. It's okay. Sure you don't want to ask one more question before you leave? So you have over here. It's okay. He asks the question, he walks out. So you have over here. Hold on. You have over here. The famous hadush that we say every year from the Gaon of Vilna. We'll say the Gaon, then we'll say a new hadush in honor of the members. The Gaon of Vilna says that the pasuk says, like we just said, if you don't give your ma'asrot, you end up getting poor. But there's another pasuk in Tehillim that says, in Mishle, Ro'e zonot yovad hon. A guy that goes with zonot, he loses his money. It's a rule. You want to lose your money? Not because he has to pay the zonot. Even if the zonot, give it to him for free. Ro'e zonot yovad hon. The pasuk says, Be'ad isha zona ad kikar lahem. That because of isha zona, he'll end up with a loaf of bread. Bezon, even a loaf of bread he won't have. That's the rule. What happens now? Since the government building something amazing, a story, a movie. You have a guy, he doesn't give his ma'asrot. He's not giving his ma'asrot. Cheapskate. His wife says, you know, I went to a shi'ur, they said if you give ma'asrot, you know, we get beracha. Honey, do you give your ma'asrot? I give it. Of course I give it. I don't give it. He doesn't want to tell his wife he's a kamsan, but kamsan. Meanwhile, he's not here. He's not giving the ma'asrot. Now, all of a sudden, what happens? He's losing his money. One second, I'm asking you an emergency question. What's the emergency question? Hi, Rabbi, can I call 311 on somebody who's blocking my driveway? Right, someone's blocking his driveway. Of course you can call. Why can't you call? That's not more said. I'm just saying that's not more said. Of course, that's not more said. It's not more said. I blocked my driveway. Anyway. But the guy's losing his money because he's not giving his ma'asrot. She thinks he's giving the ma'asrot. Now she goes to another class. And all of a sudden in the class, the Rebbetzin says, ladies, you know, if a man goes with his zona, they lose all their money. Now she puts two and two together. She says, oh my gosh, that's why we're losing all our money? He's fooling around my husband. That's why we're losing all the money. He said he gives the ma'asrot. But must be he's going with zonot. So what does she say? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. If he's going to fool around, I'm not going to fool. I'll fool around also. So therefore the Gemara says, if you're not going to give your ma'asrot, it's going to cause your wife to become a sotah. Because she's going to think the reason why you lost your money is because of ro'ezonot. So she's going to say, if he can be ro'ezonot, I'm also going to be ro'ezonot. And therefore it's going to cause her to be promiscuous. Look at the hashbon of the Gaon de Vilna. So be careful, you know. It's a po'ed yotzeh. It's just something that's going to naturally happen. The vicious cycle. You know, you say to yourself, how could this lead to that? The Gaon de Vilna connected the dots, very simply. But there's another interpretation over here, Rabotai, which is a deeper interpretation, a shkafic interpretation. The Tome Devorah, Harambam, they all talk about the obligation of Halakta Bidrachav. Malakta Bidrachav means you have to emulate the ways of God. Mahu Afata. That's the purpose. That you have to figure out the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu behaves, and then you have to try to emulate, which is not easy. It's easy to be human, but the Torah demands you to be godly. Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani. It's on ze eli v'anvehu. V'anvehu is v'ani navelo, meaning you have to be like him, which is not easy. It's easy for God to be God, but for man to be God, that's our obligation. It's one of the hardest mitzvot in the Torah. V'alakta b'drachav, mahu afata. But one of the things that Kadosh Baruch Hu does is mefanes. He's mefanes. He gives panasah to everybody. Look who he gives panasah. He gives panasah to all the creation. But there's something unique about the way God gives panasah to the whole creation. He doesn't take anything in return. That's a big way to be mefanes. God's giving is a giving for the sake of giving without getting anything back. What do you give God back for your panasah? You send him anything. You send him flowers before Shabbat, a box of chocolates. What God gives, there's no strings attached to it. You know, in marriage, it's not always like marriage. Guy gives money to his wife, but okay, do whatever, do this, do whatever. It's a give and take, take and take. But the point is, if you're emulating Borei Olam, the giving has to be giving unconditionally, without any strings attached. That's the giving of the Shev Shaman. That's the giving of God. There's the famous partnership of Yisachar and Zevulun. Yisachar really doesn't have anything of his own. Yisachar's money comes from Zevulun. Yisachar's learning all day long. He gets his measly check from the Kolel. When he gets the check, they circle the date. The date is 3 months later. They tell him, don't cash the check. Don't deposit it for 3 months. By the time he deposits it, the sheikh had devaluated three times already. It's worth nothing. It was worth nothing to start off with. But that's the Kolel guy. He doesn't have anything for himself. Where did he get all of his money from? Zebulun. It looks like Zebulun is supporting Yisachar. That's the way it looks like. But according to the Zohar Kadosh, the Baal Shem Tov also says it. In truth, the money that Zebulun gives Yisachar, Zebulun all has the money because of Yisachar. So really, he's only giving the money to what belongs to Yisachar. Who's really giving to who in that partnership? Zebulun only has money to give because Yisachar has learned. Smach Zebulun besetecha. You know why Zebulun can be happy in business? Besetecha b'Yisachar be'ohalecha, because Yisachar is in the ohel. We believe that it's the Tamid Chacham that brings the Shef up to the world. Tamid Chacham sits and learns. He gets nothing for himself. Kol ha'olam nizon ba'avur hanina beni. וחנינה בני די לו בקו חלובים מערב שבת לערב שבת. He's he gets a measly kav haruvim, but all the sheva comes from harina ben dosa. It's the same with tamid, all the tamid achamim. So the study of Torah, the tamid achamim, the sheva goes to the rest of the world. So really, Zebulun is not giving Yisachar anything. If anything, Zebulun is giving Yisachar what Yisachar gave to Zebulun first. I mean, it's a catch 27. The Zohar Kadosh refers to Tamid Hakam. It says Tamid Hakam Ikri Shabbat. Tamid Hakam is called Shabbat. What does that mean, Tamid Hakam Ikri Shabbat? It looks like that we enjoy on Shabbat from the 6 days of work. But in truth, it's the opposite. It's from Shabbat where all the 6 days gets the Shefa from. Tamir Hakam Ikri Shabbat is exactly that yesod. That it looks like the Hakam is benefiting from others. But in truth, he's the one that's benefiting the rest of the world. Whatever they have is coming from the Tamir Hakam. So I added, in olden days, you had some Tamir Hakamim. They used to work a little. Hafetz Chaim used to have a store, half hour a day open. There was a rabbi, the Gemara was a sandlar, Rabbi Yohanan a sandlar. Nashi says was a wine maker. They had a little panasan on the side. Just to live. That's called Sorech Ochel Nefesh. So that Tamir Hakam is Bechinat Yom Tov. Ochel Nefesh is Mutar and Yom Tov. Tamir Hakam that works a little more, Damara Aved, Bechinat Chola Moed. But still, you see the Tamir Hakam, ultimately he's mashpia to the whole world. Mahu afata. Tamir Hakam is giving to everyone without anything in return. And whatever they give him, they're giving him his own. Whatever they're giving him his own. So therefore, Zebulun can't be a wise, hey, I'm supporting you. Keep your mouth shut, you're supporting me. Yemen Torah in Kemach. Of course, Yisachar has to be gracious, but when you look at it from the MRI, from the guts of the way it works, that's the way it works. I mean, Hakam Ikri Shabbat. You say, how are you supporting me? You're sitting doing nothing all day. You're sitting and reading Aramaic all day. I can all the barakah come from someone that's inactive. Well, Shabbat also a day of inactivity. Shabbat Menucha. But the Gemara says, all the barakot from above and below, from the seventh day. And send Kol Birkan Dil'ela Ultata. All the barakot from above and below comes from Yom HaShivi'it, comes from the Shabbat. Oh. So this makes perfect sense. What do we call the president from the tribe of Yisachar? Netanel. Netanel means Natanel, which means that's what he's telling Zebulun. You didn't give me anything. God gave it to me. He says that Parnasa over there is coming the Zechut of God, of the Torah that we're learning. Natanel. And so the Chachamim say, because Zebulun chappers Yisachar. I'm paying you to learn, you learn. So Ben Su'ar, he gets Sa'ar from Zebulun. But ultimately, Zebulun's not really giving anything. It's Netanel, it's coming from God. The lesson over here is, that's why it clearly says by Yisachar, Hikriv et Korbano. So Zebulun can't say, it's my Korban, I paid for it. Wow. So the Torah has to go out and say, Ekrivet Korbano, Ekrivet Korbano, it is Korban. That's why only that one, because on that one you have some guy in the background saying, he's eating on my dime. Got that parasite to Yisachar. If I didn't give him the money, he'd be bringing rice and lentils to the Mizbeah. But look at that, he could afford to bring all these great korbanot because he got somebody bankrolling him. So the Pasuk comes along and says, you're wrong a thousand times. Ekrib et korbano. He brought his korban. That korban comes from himself. You gave him nothing. The Torah is the source of all the berachot. Ki mekona berachah like Shabbat. Therefore, it belongs to him. If anything, you don't get the reward, Yisachar gets the reward. Because he's mashpia to the rest of the world. The Mekubalim say Yisachar is otiyot. Yes, Sachar. He gets the Sachar. All the berachah comes from Torah, Rabotai. We know that. Anyway, the point of our lesson over here is that you have to be mashpia to the world. The point is God wants you to be a mashpia. God wants you to be a giver, not a taker. That's really the lesson over here. There's givers and there's takers. If you want to be like God, you cannot show me one example that God takes. What does he take? Once you say God takes, that means he's needy for something. God's not needy for anything. He doesn't take anything. Could you give me one example God ever took? David Meyer, could you give me an example where he took it? You won't. Don't. On the Ik, Bachar, all that stuff you can think for 2 hours. Don't waste your brain cells on this other thing. Because God doesn't take. So therefore, if we have to emulate God, the inyan is you came to this world just to give. Once already you're taking, already, or you're giving amir not to take, already you're not emulating God's ways. What's the purpose of marriage? We have a Sefer Vayikra. What's the purpose of marriage? Why did God want us to get married? That's a good question.
To have children.
You didn't have to get married for that. You could have got a concubine, get her pregnant, have a child, and move on. You have children. Marriage, and after you have children, you get rid of your wife? God had 6 kids, that's it, he stopped having kids. Okay, well, your purpose was to be a baby factory. Now the factory's closed. Here's your hat, get lost. Here's your papers, get lost. What's the idea that Borei Olam wants us to live with a wife? What's the what did we do to deserve this? Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world was created on the premise of Chesed. To do Chesed. That's why God created the world. If you look at the beginning of Vayikra, the Pasuk says, Adam ki yakrib mikem korban la Hashem min ha-behema. If a person brings a korban from himself to God from the animals. Don't we know that? When you bring a korban to God, you're bringing it from the animals. There's 3 levels. There's God, there's man, there's animal. God is the ultimate giver. Animal is the ultimate taker. Animals don't give. Animals are selfish. You ever see what they say, the guy's an animal? They're not complimenting you when they say that. That's the guy's an animal, meaning the guy's a selfish guy. He just takes it like a lion. You ever see a lion share his food? Does the lion say, you know something? I'm gonna skip lunch today. I'll give it to the Yitovim and Almanut. Never happened. When the lion's hungry, he eats. He has no mercy, the lion. Even if God put this little baby in front of him crying, the lion's hungry, eats the baby. He doesn't make chesbonot. Oh, it's a baby, poor thing. He eats it. The animal only worries about himself. That's called the animal instinct. God is the exact opposite. God is only giving. So the opposite of behemah is Hashem. Now man has free will. Man can either be like an animal or like God. So the pasuk is to be read like this. Adam ki yakriv mikem. When a person gives of himself, Adam ki yakriv mikem. He gives of himself, he sacrifices mikem from himself. Korban la Hashem, he's closer to God min habehemah than from the animal. Yeah. That means the way you get closer to God is yakrim mikem, then korban la Hashem min habehemah. But if a guy's taking, then you korban la behemah min Hashem. So therefore, that's exactly what the purpose is. So therefore, Borei Olam put us in a beautiful matzav where you get married. Marriage gives you the great opportunity to do chesed all day long. If you're not married, you don't have kids, you don't have a family, so then you become a hermit, you're alone, you have no one to give to. On the contrary, you're selfish. You cook for yourself, you eat for yourself, you have nobody to do for anything for you. So therefore, that goes against the whole purpose of the creation. Marriage is in order to strengthen the chesed. Now you have a built-in system where you can give all day long. So the purpose of marriage is to give. Finish. Not like today's kids get married. What can I get out of it? What are they going to give me? What type of gift? What type of house? What type of car? What type of this? What type of that? They're getting married to see what they can get. Such a marriage is built on the wrong foundation. The expectation in marriage is zero. You didn't get married to take. The whole purpose of marriage is one way. Of course, she has to think the same way as well. That's a perfect marriage. We said that the famous Rasha 100 times already. Matza isha matza tov. Motze ani mal mima v'tata isha. The Darshanim say, matza isha, if when you got married it's for the isha, matza tov. However, motze ani, if you got married for the ani, mal mima v'tata isha. That's the difference. You know, who's the center over here? Is it for the Isha? That's Tov. Motze Ani, Mami Mavet. Then already it's a death sentence. Because it's all selfish. What did you do for me today? That's a very important yisod in marriage. It's all chesed. Rabbi Atiyah told us last week in Eretz Yisrael, Ish v'Isha shezachu shechina b'neim. What does it mean shezachu? Well, whatever zechu means, it's a good thing, because if there's zechu, shechina has been to him. So he explained it like this, that if each one of the spouses considers it zechut that he has the other one, the shechina has been to him. Each just a zechu, they say, wow, I'm privileged that they look at their marriage as a zechut, that they're unworthy. Then shechina has been to him. But if a guy comes along and says, look how lucky she is. She could have married any of those deadbeats that she was dating. Look what she got. So that's Ish v'Isha, that the Ish says, Ish, she is Ucha. If each person feels that they're the lucky one, Ish v'Isha, she zachu, wow, I'm so lucky. Look what, that means the whole purpose is for the other, that you're giving for the other. That's the purpose of the marriage. It's a lesson that's been forgotten today. I think we once said the Rasha. The pasuk says, "Ki yikach ish isha ubaala usnea v'chat avla sefer geritut v'shelicha mebeta." That's about the divorce pasuk. Why does the pasuk have to get in all the details? Ki yikach isha, he married a ubaala. We know what happens when you get married. Why does it have to be so explicit? You know what the pasuk is saying? That we're talking about a guy that's the reason why he got married. What can he get out of it? Ki yikach isha for his own hana'a, ubaala. Know that marriage ends up in a get. V'chatav la'sefer kiditut. The whole premise of his marriage was self-serving. That's what you're getting married for. Of course, that's a tutsah of marriage. But that's the ikar hana'ah, the adam. So that's an important premise, Rabotai. Okay, anyway, Rabotai, we're here for a long time. Let's finish this thought up now. So what happens? The purpose of life is to be a giver, not a taker. Now you have a guy who God gave him 100% profits. And the Kohen comes along to his house and says, you know, could you give me 10%? And the guy says, I don't give anything away. You don't know how to give. The whole purpose is to give. Why should I give you a Kohen? You do nothing. You sit all day long in the kollel, reading, I should give you 10% of my hard-earned profits. You don't want to take away. This is a selfish guy. You know what the Torah says? Selfishness is not something that it's a button that you turn on and off. You know, I'll be selfish with this. That. Selfishness is something that's a trait. That must mean in his marriage he's a selfish husband. And therefore he doesn't give to his wife. His wife must be a slave. When everything is taking. You know what happens to such a wife that does not get any satisfaction from the husband? She says, I'll leave this guy. This guy's a deadbeat. She becomes a sota. The selfishness of the guy will cause his wife to become a sota. Because she doesn't get anything in return. All the guy wants is for himself. He's a kamsan, bar kamsan. What's the next parasha? The next parasha, the Gemara says, Kol ha-ra'eh sota bekilkula yazir atzmo min ha-yayin. The next parasha, after parasha sota, is nazir. What's the connection between sota and nazir? The guy from sota learned the lesson. Why did his wife run away from him and start going and looking in other places? Because he was a selfish guy. He didn't give her anything. He was only worried about himself. So now the Torah says, become a nazir, yazir atzmo min ha-yayin. Move away from the pleasures of life. Move away from the pleasure. Now you have to start moving away because this guy didn't want to move away from any of the all the pleasures were for himself. Yazid al Sobin Ayayin. Start to step away from the pleasures of life. And then what's the next parasha? Berkat Kohanim. Now God says, you moved away from the pleasures of life. You better chichab in mamon. Now I'll give you mamon again. Now let's reset. Now we'll get, which means the money that I took away from you when you didn't give the Kohen. So your wife became a sota. You made the Shura becoming a Nazir. Now what happens? Take two. You barakhecha b'mamon. Now let's start again. Now let's see when I give you the barakah the second time around, if you'll spend it and do it the right. You see the flow of the parasha according to this? It's a guy that was selfish, paid the price of selfishness, made the tikkun of selfishness. And then Borei Olam says, here you go, you better chicha again. Now start again. But this time, yishmerecha. You should be protected. You should be protected from yourself. You should be protected from yourself. That you shouldn't get in the way of your own blessing. Last time you got in the way, you don't want to share it with the Kohen. And that's why, who gives the Birkat Kohanim? The Kohen. The Kohen that you robbed the first time around. The Kohen says, I have no grudges against you. You didn't pay me my masrot, no problem. You learned your lesson? The Kohen comes to the guy and says, your money, God should give you the money back. The same Kohen that you didn't pay your debt the first time around, and therefore you had to suffer because of it. The Kohen says, I'm not taking the kama. Borei Olam believes in Teshuvah. Let the Kohen come back along and say, your money, God should give you more money over there. I don't want to put my hand in your pocket. But now you learned your lesson. Remember what happened to your wife. Your marriage got broken up because of your selfish ways. I think we learned when I was in Israel. When I was in Israel, I did the daf. I didn't do it with the boys, but I did it myself. There was a Gemara over there in Sota. In Zivahim, I'm sorry. I don't know how you learned it. We didn't learn it together, so I can ask the fellas how they learned it. I guess it was on page Chavtet Amud Bet. The Gemara says over here, in the name of Rabbi El-Azar, in the name of Rabbi Yohanan, in Ishto Shel Adam Meta, Bar Menan, a person's wife doesn't die, Ela Im Ken Mevakshim Mimenu Mamon, they come to him for money and he says, I don't have.
So his wife dies because of that. Well, how do you learn this Gemara? It says, "Im ein lecha l'shalem, lama yikach mishkabecha metachtecha." I wasn't here, so you guys must have said 7 or 8 pshatim. I'm all ears. What's it got to do? A guy comes, you have money? He says, I don't have any money. Ah. They come for money and he says, and no, they take his wife. You know what the explanation is? Why are they coming to him for money? Because he owes money. This guy over here borrowed money. And he came along and he said, I'll pay back, you know, in a month, 2 months, whatever he said the terms were. So they come back in 2 months. They say, okay, I'm here for my money. What does he say? Endly. What's it, endly? You don't feel a responsibility? You don't feel a response? Somebody gave you something. You don't feel a responsibility that you have to not reciprocate. It's not called reciprocating. This is just called paying back. Reciprocating would mean if he needs a loan one day, you give him a loan. This is not reciprocating. This is just being a mensch. Guy lent you money, you pay him back. And every time he comes out, there's a guy say, Endly, 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 smiles, Endly. You have no responsibility? A man who's responsible cannot say Endly. If a guy knows he has a home, he'll figure out how to pay it back. But the guy says, Endly, Endly. What are you going to tell him when he comes? Don't worry, Endly, Endly. What are you going to do? Take my shirt, take my house. What are you going to do? Endly, Endly. Bankrupt, Endly. So this guy's irresponsible. So they say, you know what it is again? These buttons you can't turn on and off, by the way. That's a midah. That means if you don't appreciate a guy who lent you money, that you could tell him like this when he comes to the door, you make a funny face in his nose, and you tell him, Andy, how much your wife does for you? You probably don't appreciate her either. You probably don't appreciate your wife either. Because she's... Which means you're the biggest baal hof to your wife. Your wife does everything for you. Borei Olam says you don't appreciate baal hof, take her away from you. That is Borei on his marriage. When he comes along to the guy, it was a one-time deal. He lent you money. You can tell the guy in though. That must be you're doing that to your wife every single day. Your wife comes along and says, take me out for dinner. Spend some time with me. Endly, endly. I'm busy. I'm learning. I'm going. I'm coming. I'm endly, 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 endly. You don't feel obligated to your wife that you have to give her back something for all that she does. Every time she comes, you ask you for something. Endly, endly. Excuses. I can't go. Come to my mother's. Visit my grandmother. Endly. Visit my uncle. Endly. Come to me with the wedding. Endly, endly. That's probably what's happening over here. But if a person says, look at all my wife does for me. She asks me for a certain nothing. You can't say endly. You're baal hov. You owe. So Borei Olam says that's a midah keneged midah. The purpose we're saying over here is the marriage is based on giving, and that's why probably the rabbis were so smart. The way you mikdash isha is you give her a coin. You have to give her something. That's the whole way of kiddushin. Kiddushin is giving. They would say the whole kiddushin is not hal until you gave her something. Why don't you say simple? Why don't she have to give you something? They're teaching the husband to mikdash, aish mikdash. But it's the same way for the lady. If it was giving a lady, she has to say the other way. She has to reciprocate. But again, it starts with the man. Because the man is a mashpia. The zakhar is a mashpia. The zakhar is the nekeva is a mekabelet. So the real hashpa'ah is on the man. But of course, to the ladies in their way as well. They're doing it to the children more when they're raising the children, etc. So that's the cycle over here. Ve'ishet kadashav lo yiyeh. Sota, Nazir, and Berkat Kohanim. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen ve'amen.